Today is the 15th of August 2016. I'm recording the life and times of James David Kelly, known as Jim.
Jim, I could start off by my great-great-granddad. He was a John Kelly, but we cannot get any information on birth or death. But great-granddad, he was James Bernard, known as Edward Kelly. There again, circa about 1843 to 1923. My granddad, John Charles Kelly, he was born in 1872 and died at 1954. He was married to Amelia Therese Anderson, 1871 to 1954. My dad, he was Edward Joseph, known as Ted Kelly. He was born in 1907 and died in 1974. My mum, who of course was Dad's wife, Edward's wife, Muriel Lynette Cantillon, born 1910 and died in 2006. Dad, a lot of his life, he was a commercial rabbiter, which was great for us kids, as he taught me how to handle rabbit poison, feed and look after the 24 dogs we had, and also I loved helping on the farm, horse riding, and he taught us very, very strictly how to use a rifle, which ranged from the 22 to the shotgun, which I borrowed one day when Dad wasn't around, held it about 2 inches off my shoulder. That was a bad mistake. Yeah.
We'll just pause a minute. Where were you living at that stage?
Well, Dad actually had two lots of rabbiting. One was up at Mohawker on the Wairoa Road, and my biggest memory was when he was at Sheridan on Tuanui Station. We had a little batch up there on the side of the road, and that's where we did what I can remember most of the life of Dad's career of rabbiting. Our family of six, I had three sisters, Joan, Gail and Glenda, and two brothers, Ray and Brian. When I was born, I was not expected to live. I was classed as a skinny rabbit. My mum was not well and could not look after me, as well as Brian, who was only 13 months old. So I was lucky in having a second mum, which I really appreciated in my latter years of life. It was a Mrs. May McIntyre, and everyone knew her as Mac, who took me in and looked after me until I commenced school. I think being so skinny when I was born, my lungs never formed properly, and I could walk to school, but once arriving at school, I find myself in hospital. An ambulance was called, and I ended up in an oxygen tent very regularly. Currently, thank goodness, my asthma now is controlled by daily asthma and medication puffers, which I will take for the rest of my life. I was in the doctor's about a month ago. He gave me a full examination, and he is very, very pleased with the way it is controlled now. Yeah. Modern medicine. Schooling. I started at the local Catholic school in 1949, where I went through classes of tiny tots, standard 1 to standard 6 primary, and 1 year at secondary before leaving at the end of 1958. I did actually end up in one class 2 years running because of my absenteeism of my health problems, and I spent very little time at school in that particular year. After leaving school, I had quite a bit of employment, different jobs. But during 1959, I was employed at A.W. Holder & Sons, a wholesale plumbing outlet, which is still operating today. When I first started there, Dad Holder from New Plymouth, he opened up a branch here in Hastings where the two sons, John and Alistair Holder, Alistair and his sons are still running their company today. Pop in and see them every now and again, and a big laugh of Alistair. And then I decided, well, I wasn't very cut out to be a store person, I don't think. And I had itchy feet, like most youngsters. Yes. So I wrote to the Cooks and Stewards Union in Wellington, and also the Deckhand Union in Wellington. Never heard back for a number of months. And one day I received a telegram from the Cooks and Stewards Union. If I was interested in the job of becoming a cadet steward, call into the Union Steamship Company office in Hastings. This was on a Tuesday, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so I went down there straight away. I had to get a doctor's certificate Wednesday, and I was down in Wellington Thursday. My dad, being a good dad, took me down by rail car, took me to the ship where I was interviewed, told me roughly what would be happening in my life. Then I had to go to town, had no money. So poor Dad had to dig in his pockets, buy me the uniform. And we actually sailed out of Wellington on the Friday at 3 p.m.
You didn't have much time to change your mind, did you?
No, I did not. I was given a top bunk. There were 5 of us young cadets there. Friday night was very good. Saturday morning, I was asked how I felt. I was as good as gold. Well, that's good. Got out of the bunk, put my feet on the floor. I had morning sickness. And I came right during the day, went to bed at night, because it took 3 days, 4 nights to get to Sydney. And every morning, same performance, seasick. But no, that was all right. We arrived in Sydney on a Tuesday morning, 8 o'clock sharp, we were tied up, where we stayed until Friday, 3 p.m, left again for Auckland. There again, every morning, seasick. And I thought, oh, I don't know if I can stand this. It wasn't very pleasant. Arrived in Auckland after 3 days, 4 nights sailing. 3 days in Auckland, left Auckland, same performance. Seasick, every morning. And I thought, no. And I was ready to say, no, I'll quit. And then, hey, got over my seasickness. So we sailed, doesn't matter how rough it was. We had a real, real rough crossing about August, September. And some of the crew that had been on that ship for years were seasick.
What were the boats that you were on?
I was on the TSS Manawai, which is a Union Steamship Company liner. They called them a liner in them days. 2 classes of passengers, first class and cabin class. As a cadet, we would spend 3 weeks normally on first class, and then we'd be put into cabin class area for a week. The only difference really that I could see was if you're in first class and you ordered a steak, you got a porterhouse. But if you're in cabin class, you got a rump. Chicken is another real good thing. Chicken, first class, would be the breast. Second class, you would have got the legs and the wing. But otherwise, meals and that were really the same. And I think we treated the customers the same as any other, with our first or second.
Because that was the only way you could get over to Australia, wasn't it, by the boat?
It was very expensive, apparently, to fly, and they never had the aircraft that they have today. So, the majority was ships, because there was the Wanganella, which was a different line. I can't remember which line that was. But we would see each other now and again to see if we'd pass each other and wave out to each other. But it was a great life. I enjoyed that very much. But in the end, the ship was getting older, and we did have the odd breakdown. But if we broke down at sea, we still seemed to get to the destination on time. There again, I was very, very fortunate. Very short time on the ship, I was called into the chief steward's office. And I said, hello, what have I done wrong? And he said, Jim, we would like you to become head cadet. And I said, well, hang on. I said, there's another 3 boys older than me, been here longer than me. Hey, Jim, don't worry about that. I've asked you, would you become head cadet? Which I did take on. Okay, if there was a job not done properly, I was the one that got the kick for it. But hey, I could control the boys after they settled down, having me as their boss. One area we had which was quite funny, we had a big area in front of the purser's office, which was our area to look after. When we arrived in port, we had to get on our hands and knees and scrub all the polish off. And then, once it was scrubbed to our satisfaction, I had to go and get the chief steward. He would come out, he had a little moustache, a bit like Hitler. He'd fold his arms and have a look. And I'd be standing next to him. Jim, yes, sir. Look over there. Can you see a bit of shining line over there? Yes, sir. Scrub the whole lot. Get the boys to scrub the lot again. Not just that little bit, the lot. So that's what would happen. We'd have to scrub the whole lot again. Hands and knees. When it was dry, we were happy. Go back and get the chief. That's good. Now polish it, and I want to be able to see my face in it. And that's what we did, but we did have an electric polisher. When it was all polished up, he would come out and have a look. Well done. Now we will cover it. And it was covered usually from about Wednesday to the Friday before we sailed out again. Yes, and our final trip that we did on the Manawai was, we had an island cruise, they called it. But it certainly wasn't like the cruise ships of today. They had the basics, but no air conditioning in them days, and just a jet air blow, Man, it was hot down in them cabins. But very enjoyable. After a 10-day cruise, we got back to Wellington. All the crew, the Auckland crew, were put off. We actually sailed that night down to Wellington, day and a half down to Wellington, and we're all given out a final pay and sent home. But I could not get another job on the ships that I wanted. They offered me Inter-Islander, but after doing overseas, yes, sure. No, I wasn't interested. No.
So that was the finish of it?
That was the finish of it, yeah. But one thing I did forget to tell you, the wages on there, when we left Wellington and went to Sydney, my wages, we got £2, which equaled to, $4. That was from Wellington to Sydney. And then when we got to Auckland, we got £2 too. So that was our money to spend. After 1 month on there, we were called and we'd go to one table and we got all our pay that was due for that month, excepting holiday pay. After 3 months, we would actually go to one table, we would sign off the ship. Everything was paid to us. Wages, holiday pay, they owed you nothing, you owed them nothing. If you wanted your job back, you took 5 steps to another table and signed back on again. But you did get a certificate to say that you were very good conduct, working, etc. And you signed back. That's the way your pay went. Yeah, so it was an interesting life.
So how many years in total were you with uni and steamship?
It was only a short period of time, really. It was only 10 months, as I say.
But even so, that's a lot of crossings in that time.
Oh, yes. It was, as I say, it took us 3 days, 4 nights. When we arrived, what they called the quieter period, we'd been port from Tuesday until Friday. When we had our busy season, like around the Christmas holiday period, we would be sailing, arriving Tuesday, out again Wednesday. So it was a quick turnaround. And what jobs we used to do in the 3 days, we had to get done on the day.
And so when you finished then, signed off, what did you do then?
When I signed off, I came back to Hastings. We were a bit disappointed. I wanted to go back to sea, but as I say, the only jobs I could find or offered was one on the Inter-Islander, which I didn't really want. So I came back and seen the old mate at Holders, and I went and seen Alistair and got a job back there for a while. But when I turned 18, my older brother Ray, he was working for an AP Wellington Transport, which was a trucking company in Hastings, and also there's a branch in Napier. Now in them days, all the freight had to come up by rail. There was a licensing put in by the governments that you could not run trucks unless you got a real special permit or a real special load. So our main job in Hastings was you'd arrive there in the truck in the morning and you would have your set customers or set area of Hastings to do. All that freight for that area would be loaded onto your truck and you would deliver, which hopefully you finished around about lunchtime. And in the afternoon you got the bulk freight. So you could have a load for Morrison Industries, Fernware, that type of thing. But we'd never had curtain siders like they've got today. So all our freight had to be tarped if it was raining. And one of our favourite freight on a rainy day was the Unilever soap. Trying to deliver soap, keep it dry, because they had to go that day. We had no storage for it. Now, Napier Wellington and Hastings was that big. We had more trucks than we had parking space for. So we used to take our trucks home at night. But on the way home, we used to call and see the Hastings Hotel, have a couple of ales, and then go home. So it must have been good for the public in one way. There's all the trucks parked out. But it was 6 o'clock closing in them days, so had to go home. I was offered a job at Napier Wellington Transport, and my brother actually worked for the company, Ray. He worked there. He says, come and join us. So I said, well, I'll have to go for HT, so don't worry about that. We'll get you a truck licence. You just learn all your answers and questions. And being kind my brother was to me, he picked a V8 truck, which was good, plenty of power, but had a crash box. Now people that had never driven a crash box, no synchro mesh, so every gear had to be double de-clutched until you got to know the vehicle. Once you got to know it, you could actually change it without a clutch. Anyway, on the day of the test, I was nervous like anybody else. I did miss a few gear changes and crunch and a crunch, and after I settled down, the traffic cop beside me, he said, well, you've handled this very well, Jim. He says, I'll tell you what. He said, I've got a bit of time. I'm up my sleeve. He says, we'll go up to Tomato Park. In them days, the road wasn't as wide. It wasn't sealed. So we went up to the park and back down, and he said, very, very good. So I started off with Napier Wellington there and stayed there for a number of years. And then I was offered a job with Ace Transport. Now, Ace Transport, I started off on the same type of thing, local delivery. It used to be Ian and Colin Muir's company, and they sold out to Ace. So I went and worked for them for a while and said to the boss, I said, look, I don't really want to do town and around. I've done 6 years roughly now, town and around. I said, how about getting me onto the bulk side of it? So there again, I had to go and sit another licence to get an articulated licence. I ended up with an artic, so I ended up carrying concrete posts from Awatoto Concrete Company, which were in Marakakahu Road. We cut them from there to the rail. They were forklifted on, but they weren't forklifted off. We had to do that by hand, even the strainer post. So after a full day on concrete post, I think if I'd ever done anything wrong, they wouldn't have been able to take fingerprints off me because there was nothing left in my fingers. And I also got on to bulk fertiliser from Napier Wharf to the fertiliser works when the ships were in. And that was a good job. But after a while, I thought, well, Jimmy, you're going to wear yourself out, all this heavy lifting, etc., etc., etc. By this time, I was a 21-year-old. And I had an uncle, or guess his uncle, Uncle Sam. He worked for Nimmons. So I thought, oh, well, I'll go along and see Sam. Sam said, it's a good job, Jim. He says, vacancy coming up. So I was interviewed by John Nimmon, and John said, right, you better go for your bus licence. So there again, I had to go for a medical driving test. And I ended up doing the, what were in them days when I first started, was Havelock to Hastings Hospital. That's as far as we went. We had morning shift, afternoon shift, late shift on a Friday night, finished about 10 o'clock. School runs. And after I'd proved myself there that I could handle the bus without denting them, I was put onto charter work as well. And my favourite charter work, believe it or not, was school kids up to Camp Kaitaua. My wife used to say, well, Jim, you're away again? Yeah, another holiday. But once we got up at Camp Kaitaua, our first trips up there, we didn't have hot water heated by electricity. So the bus driver, which was Jimmy, he used to cut firewood. And we had a boiler there, and we used to boil the water up there by that. Then we got the electric power in. And Camp Kaitaua was one of my favourite charter trips. But we did a lot of different ones, like the Mormons once a month. They used to go up to Temple View, and that was leaving around about 10 o'clock on a Friday night. And the Taupo Road was not like it is today. It used to take us approximately 3.5 to 4 hours to get to Taupo. And then from Taupo, we'd have a break there and carry on to Hamilton. Deadline of 4 o'clock in the morning to be there so they could start their services. We went to a hotel, stayed there, picked them up again about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Saturday afternoon, bring them home. So we did have a variety of different charters. It was a good part of the job. Embarrassing moments, yes, I did have a very embarrassing moment on the service runs. I'd been going for a few hours, I suppose, and got out to Havelock. In them days, we used to take the mail from Hastings to Havelock. That was part of the job as well. Got to Havelock North Village, unloaded the mail, stepped back in the bus, looked, oh, I've got no passengers on board, so a while ago, heading up towards Sumner Avenue, and had a bit of wind in the tummy. I looked up in the mirror again, no, nobody on the bus. I actually stood up out of the driver's seat, and I let a ripper go. And then I hear the shuffle, shuffle, shuffle. Look up in the mirror, and this lady must have been bending down, getting something out of a bag. She looked up the mirror, she's as red as a beetroot. I think I must have been redder than the track, right? Looking back at her. But I stayed there for a number of years at Nimmons. There again, got a bit tiring, I suppose, doing the same thing. So I was offered a job at Havelock North Motors on the forecourt. So I went there. And my main job there was forecourt, Monday to Friday and Saturday. I got doing Saturday as well. But I didn't stay there that long, but it was a full-on job. And I've got a brother, Brian, which I mentioned earlier on. Brian was in the supermarket arena. He started off with a dairy, built up in Hastings to three supermarkets, one in Wairoa and one in Waipakarau. So he said to me, Jim, how do you like to come and learn the grocery trade? So I did my training in Hastings, and then I went down to Waipak every day and managed the supermarket down there until he was bought out by the Consumers Co-op, which offered me a job, but I declined. And I'll be cheeky and I'll tell you the reason I declined. My wife, Glenys, she worked at Waddy's, and we could buy staff sales. Consumers Co-op, I had to sign a form to say that I would, and my wife, would buy all our groceries from Consumers Co-op. And I says no. So I never joined them. So I ended up back at Nimmin's, and I did my time there again, back on the road, and the opportunity came to be an office manager. So I took the big plunge and thought, well, see how we go. I had to do all the supervising of the drivers, make sure the buses were ready, the charter work, school runs were covered. Did that for a number of years, but John Nimmin decided he'd retire, and new management came in, and they didn't really want me. They wanted to start off fresh. So it was a bit disappointing at the time. So, yes, I did leave. Very short notice I was given. I think that hurt a wee bit, but never mind, I got over that. Yeah. And my brother Brian, he had a business, a small canning factory at Whakatū, where he canned kiwi fruit and asparagus. They were the main crops. And we also did berries in the berry season. And that was only about a 6 month job. And I was offered a job for the other 6 months in a pack house packing, well, not packing apples, but it was an apple shed. And I ended up as dispatch clerk. And I must have done the job all right, because I did 3 consecutive seasons at the pack house. And the last season I was there, we ended up with a terrific hailstorm. And a lot of the staff were laughing. And the manager came out to them and says, I wouldn't be laughing. He said, this could close the factories down. And he came up to me and said, Jim, I think before the big rush is on, have a bit of time off, find yourself another job. But he said, there won't be any. So what am I going to do? So I rang up a man by the name of Don Richards from Waipawa, who I had a lot to do. He had Waipawa buses. I had a lot to do with him over the previous years with Nimmin's. We used to help each other out when we were busy. So Don said, you better come down for an interview. So I said to the manager of the pack house, look, I'm going down to Waipawa. Half hour to get down there. Say a half hour. Well, now, no, wait an hour interview. Half hour to get back. We'll wait a couple of hours. No problem at all. Believe it or not, it's a 4 hour interview. And I still had no job. And about 5 days later, he rang me up. Jim, come down and see me. So I said to John, our pack house manager, I said, wants me to go down again. Yeah, where you go? He said, well, busy, busy. So I went down. He said, look, got a job. He says, oh, what do you like of buying parts? I said, I've never bought parts in my life. Oh, you'll be able to manage that. So he sat me down at the computer. Okay, Volvo B10. We need some pistons or something, whatever the part may be. Go on to this. See what we paid for them last time. Hunt around these, you know, there's a lot of the places because it's delivered to them. So that's what I did. So I started a job down there. And he also supplied a car to run down to Waipawa and back. I wasn't there that long. And I was called up to the office and said, Jim, I'd like to run the workshop. We had 2 mechanics down there. One was a Kiwi. A very, very good mechanic, but very, very slow. And the second bloke was an American. He would not fix anything. It was new parts all the time.
Yeah.
Okay, in them days you had spark plugs which could be pulled out and cleaned, but no, he wouldn't do that. So him and me had a few little arguments, and he decided to leave. And then we got bigger and bigger, of course, and then Don decided, well, he's got to get another mechanic. So he brought a chap in that had many, many years of experience in buying, because he was his own boss. So I was actually asked to relinquish that part of it. But in the period of time, we had grown very, very big, and we started a depot in Hastings. So that's where I ended up in the Hastings depot. Started off as a management position. There again, what I was doing at Nimmin's, accepting the pricing, another chapter, the pricing, because my area of looking after staff ended up Wairoa, because he brought out Wairoa Bus Company. He also brought out White Buses and Danny Virk, which he named W&W. And my area really extended from Wairoa right through to Danny Virk, looking after school runs. If drivers had a problem, go and try and sort it out for them. A lot of the drivers were part-timers. Also to look after the fuel tanks. We had fuel tanks on farms, so go and make sure we did have enough fuel to last for the month. Make sure I wasn't going to walk about in other cars, all that type of thing. So, yes, there was a lot of stress involved, a lot of travelling involved, and I decided, well, really, I needed a break from transport, which I did. And my son, young Ross, he'd gone over to Melbourne, and he rang up and says, Jim, he says, I've just applied for a job at Firefly Coaches, and they run buses from Melbourne, or coaches, Melbourne to Sydney and Melbourne to Adelaide. I've told the boss over there, what do you do? He says, get them over here now. So we hummed and hawed, and anyway, I went over to Australia, ended up accepting a job. The money over there was tremendous compared to what you had in New Zealand. So we came back, we had to sell a house, sell the motorhome, etc., etc. It was quite a amazing thing, but we did go over there. And when I got over there, the job that was actually vacant when I applied, he had to relinquish and give to somebody else. Well, we were delayed a wee bit in New Zealand on a matter which I don't really want to say. He said, Jim, don't worry. So he put me into the car. We went down to his cousin's place. His cousin only had about 400 buses, but it was suburban running. So I spoke to him and he said, well, Jim, I haven't got a job for you, but what I'm going to get you to do was write with you. Come down here every day you want to come down. You don't get paid. But jump on a bus and you'll learn your way around Melbourne, because Melbourne's a big city. Yeah. So it did help me with the geographical side of Melbourne by going there. Then one day I was called into his office and said, Jim, one of our drivers is going away for 3 months. How would you like to do this run? Yeah, so I wouldn't mind that one. It was a nice, easy run. We started around about 6 in the morning, and there again you were shifts. Your latest run about 9 o'clock at night. So that's what I did. I did that for 3 months as a casual. So, no holiday pay, but that was all built in. Very lucrative.
Yes.
So that run finished. Oh, Jimmy said, so-and-so's leaving. Another area. Do you know that run? I said, well, I went out from earlier on. Yeah. Go for a couple of rides. I went for a couple of rides. Yeah, I could do that. So I ended up on that run. And it did carry on for that for a little while. And then I got a ring from Firefly, which was the original company.
Yes, sure.
Jimmy, you'd like to do a charter for me? I said, no, not really. I said, you know, you taught me how to do the Sydney run and Melbourne run. I'd rather do that for the day or 2 days. He said, okay. He said, you can do the Melbourne to Adelaide, which left the depot at 8 o'clock at night and arrived in Adelaide approximately 6 p.m. Adelaide time. Slept the night and he came home the following day. And I ended up doing that for 2.25 years. So that was just a one-day job. But there again, I was only a casual. Christmas time came. Jim, what do you think about working Christmas? Well, look, I've got no family. There are drivers out here that have got family. I will go. So let the person stay home with their children. Yeah. So Christmas Day at casual rates.
Oh, I can imagine. Like a gold mine.
Well, I've got to be honest, I left there after 2.25 years. And the reason I left was the age was getting a wee bit older. And I did find on a nice, hot summer's day, even though we had the most modern coaches, well-looked-after vehicles that I've ever driven. And I'll go a wee bit more onto that one. If I had a vehicle that had a rattle, I arrive back in Melbourne and says, number 50's got a rattle, whereabouts, somewhere on the left. They'd look at the board, it's due to go out tomorrow. They'd rub it off the board, put another coach on. Two mechanics would jump in it the next day, go for a ride, find that rattle, fix it. Joe, the owner of the place, says, Jim, I don't want my passengers travelling. It was 745k one way to Adelaide, or 945 to Sydney. I don't want them listening to a rattle. And that was his attitude. No, very, very lovely coaches. But as I say, after 2.25 years, my age was creeping up a wee bit. And I was starting to get a wee bit dozy on a nice hot summer's day and battling to stay awake. And I thought, well, Jim, I'm going to get out of it while I can. And I was offered a job there again without too much trouble. It was driving a new coach company in Melbourne Airport had put in a tender for running the big car parks, which held 3,500 to 4,000 cars when it was full. Also to shift all the staff from cleaners to security, everybody, customs, to shift them from their car parks to the airport. And I said, yeah, I wouldn't mind having a crack at that. But the only downfall of it was, in one way, it was 24-7. So you had morning shift, afternoon, night shifts. And after about 6 months, I said to the boss, I said, how many staff have we lost? Because I got on to the boss very well. Why? I said, how many have we lost? So he told me the figure we'd lost was 15 of us at the start of it. And he said, we've only got about 70 left, haven't we? I said, yep. Why? He said, I said, look, their bodies don't know if it's daylight, night time, lunchtime, breakfast time. I said, why don't you sit down and try and work out days, nights?
Yes, roster.
So that's what he did. And I was very fortunate because I came in after a break. There's a notice on the notice board. We're looking at putting on AM, PM, and he had the hours up there, what they'll do, night shift. So I put my name down very, very quickly and also text him very, very quickly. AM, please. And I got my AM. But okay, that AM started some mornings at 4 o'clock, but you finished by 1, and the latest we started was about 10 o'clock. But we did 80-hour days. Odd time might get pulled off to do a night shift if somebody went.
Now, somewhere in the middle of all of this, you met Glenys.
I met Glenys, yeah, I did. Believe it or not.
We need to recall Glenys to the table. I'm sure she can hear.
Yeah, she'll be there. Here it is. Right, asking about Glenys. I came up off the ship after the TSS Monowai.
Yes.
Still a youngster. Still really wasn't settled down. But I met up with a very good friend. Our next door neighbours, there was a young girl living there. She had a boyfriend, came from Opotiki. And Mike and me got on very, very well. We used to go everywhere together, you know. Friday night, jump on the car. Where are we going? Oh, we're going down to Opotiki. So we're here up to Opotiki. Sometimes we go over the Taupo Road. Sometimes we go through Gisborne. And one night we even decided to go to Coast Road. This was after doing a full day's work. But Mike and me got on very well. We did a lot of trips away. Anyway, we're back in Hastings here. And he said, Tim, he said, I'm going to the old time dance tomorrow night. No, I'm not going to the old time dance. I've got 2 left feet. No, come to the old time dance. So went to the old time dance. And Glenys was there. I didn't really take much notice. She got me up for a Gay Gordon's and told her I couldn't dance. So she learned me the rough few steps to get through the Gay Gordon's. The following Friday night, we're uptown, Mike and me, and who do we bump into? Glenys. Timmy, come to the dance tomorrow night. No, not really my cup of tea. Come to the dance. So she twisted my arm and ended up going back to the dance the following Saturday night. When I walked in the door, there she is, surrounded by boys. Anyway, I must have had something a wee bit better than them. And we started our friendship from there. She was only 16 and a half, and I just turned 17. And our friendship grew. We came engaged on the 12th of August, 64. We got married 14 months later. On the 9th of October, 1965. Out of the marriage, we had 2 sons. One born in 1969, which was Shane. And young Ross, he was a ratbag. He was a real hard case, our little Ross. But he was born in 1972. They in turn have married now and left home. Both gone over to Australia to live. Shane, the eldest, he's in Brisbane. Joshua, our grandson, he's in Wellington. He's got 2 daughters. He's got Michaela and Olivia. And Ross, they shifted over to Melbourne. And they got 2 daughters, Serena and Caitlin. So really we've only got 1 Kelly boy who's living in Wellington and our Kelly generation. But he's 22 now, or 24. This is correcting me there. Our time flies. Met up with a lovely girl down there. So we just hope everything plans out and we do get some Kellys out of it.
Now we're going to ask Glenys to tell us something about where her folks came from.
Hi, I'm Glenys, born in 1944, and the only daughter, having 3 brothers, to John Douglas Corbin, who's just recently passed away at the age of 97 and a half. And my mother, Kathleen Frieda Witchen, or Veechen, depending on whereabouts you come from. And she was born in Petone. My dad was born in Hastings. So they were both around, I think, at the 1931 earthquake. Dad was a labourer. He met Mum, the only one that he ever wanted to settle down with. Sure. And it was reciprocal. His dad, William Alfred Corbin, he was born at Tikakino in 1872, and he married an Ada Everilda Millett. She was born in Christchurch in 1881 and died in 1952. On the Corbin side, William Corbin came out from Jersey and the Channel Isles. He came out to New Zealand in 1849, and he met up with a Jane Glennie who was born in England, and she died in 1923. The Millett side came out from Cornwall, and they were married in 1874 and came out straight away, and they settled in Christchurch. So it goes through from there. My mother's side, even though it's a German-sounding name, that particular family was really on the Prussian side of the Danish border, and that was how that came out. So we understand that the Witchen came out and ended up in Nelson, and many years later was written in German letter saying that there was money in Chancery. He had to go back and get it, but no way, because he was supposed to be conscripted into the German army, and he got away over to England eventually, so there was no way that he was going to do that. The Mullaney side, which Harold Frederick Theodore Witchen married this Kathleen Ellen Mullaney, unfortunately not registered, and we understand that she was born in 1892, but we've had to release that. That's come back to 1891. There's no way that she could have been born four months after her brother. And she died in her 49th year in Hastings, so she was very, very young. My granddad, Harold Frederick Theodore Witchen, was actually an alcoholic. Lost his business, plumbing business, and his house through drink, which was a shame. So both mum and dad worked at Watties. Jimmy Watty at my farewell in 69 when I was having Shane. He remembered my parents, and my mother also did housekeeping for Jimmy Watty's mother. So we've got this long association with the Watties. And then even in Dad's Corbin side in Gisborne, there has been members in the family and extended members of those members who've worked at Watties. And each of us have had a very good report from working with them.
You will have seen that book that was written by one of the local newspaper people about the history of the first 50 years.
Got that. Plus the coffee mug that we got for the 60 years. Yeah. Even with Mum's surname being the German sounding one, Jimmy Watty had some people coming through his factory one day and he wanted Mum, he asked specifically for Mum, she was on the line, if she would peel these black Doris plums and the ridicule that she had to put up with. She actually went to Jim and asked him, I really feel it could be other people that could do this job. And he said, you're the one I want and you're the one I'm going to have. And she said, well, I'm getting very rude remarks. But then bullies, you see. We've had bullies all the way through our lives, whether it's at school, whether it's at workplace, whether it's in clubs. You don't get rid of them.
Black Doris plums, we've been trying to find out where they were bred. Do you know, nobody knows where they came
from. Jim's mother, that's all she'd make, plum jam, was Black Doris.
But where did they come from?
Off a tree.
Yes, but nobody knows who bred the tree.
Have they googled it?
We've done everything. We've got some of the oldest nurserymen in Hawke's Bay that want to know.
Well, that was something. Mum and Dad, basically, I can remember doing the housework at home because Mum was brought up into service, where she had to go out at the age of 13, live in people's homes for the week, come home. And her father stood at the door and took two-thirds of Mum's money so he could go off down to drink it. Made it extremely... And Mum always had this fear, because they shifted house so often, they couldn't pay the rent. It was just one of those things. I mean, they just shifted house so often. But he came up here... He must have come up after the earthquake, because Mum must have felt it down in Wellington or somehow or other.
Yes,
and
please.
He came up to be a plumber up here, and he plumbed the old dentist rooms, and there was a big house in Pepper Street that I understand that he did. My brother may remember more on that side of it, but Granddad ended up with Parkinson's disease and lived in a home, and that's how he passed away. 59, in those days, us kids didn't go to funerals. So we never went to our grandparents'.
So how many brothers and sisters did you have?
I had three brothers. And I was number three. They didn't stop at perfection. They had another one. They reckon we poked our noses in whatever barrier cream that Mum and Dad used. It didn't work with either me or my younger brother. Yeah, so I was born in 44 and he was born in 48. And then I started work at Watties after I worked for John Drury, first off. Well, I basically left school. I got five firsts in the fourth form. And that's quite unusual in a sense that the first equal part of that, I got core maths. I would recite the times table, and Dad was pretty strict on all this sort of thing, but I get D for David all the way through for my maths, and they couldn't understand it. It wasn't until I got to intermediate and had a Eunice Cater, who was my teacher in the first form, and all of a sudden things started to click into place. And ended up in the fourth form getting five firsts. from there I went and one of the teachers, one of my commercial subject teachers, typewriting, she rang my mother up and said that there was a firm in town and accountants that wanted a junior. And I went for an interview. I got that interview, but after 13 months, I didn't want to work till 7 o'clock at night without getting paid for it. And I was only getting £5 a week, and he was charging at 3 and 9 pence quarter hour. And you had to write down everything. And if I did 3 letters in 15 minutes, then I had to charge each of them 15 minutes. And I thought that was rude. So I would only put down the last one. And the next time if I did it, I made sure that that one didn't get it, that somebody else got it. So the long and short of it is I ended up by having an interview with Christie's in town. They were going to pay £7.10 a week, and Washies were going to pay me £7. But then we looked at it and thought, well, Washies would be a better choice because there was the opportunity perhaps of overtime, of long-term employment, and that's how it worked out. I ended up by being their punch card operator and was teaching people. I was their first computer operator. I had somebody standing in the office all day watching me. There was girls on punch card and verification cards. There was a big, what are they called, an IBM 1440. Oh, that was our first computer. But they had the 420 accounting machine going. That would do 100 cards go through a minute. I was working on a collator that would do 150 cards a minute. And then I was on the sorter, and that would do 650 cards a minute. And I kept those three machines going all day without stopping. And I became their first computer operator on that. I would step on 4 or 5 girls' toes if I didn't take it. I'd only step on one person's toes if I did take it. Yes. That person was actually at school with my older brother, Tony. So I thought, well, I'll step on his toes because he could be a computer programmer, and I didn't have that ability to be a programmer. Yeah. And so therefore I became their first computer operator, which resulted in going up and down the country. Who is this Glenys Kelly? She gets more out of this computer than anybody else.
I think you mentioned in the book.
Yeah. So anyway, that's how it's worked. And from then I was pregnant with our eldest boy, and I had 8 brand new girls to teach from school. So we took 2 on the Mondays and the Tuesdays of 2 consecutive weeks. It didn't take very long to find out. You had daily jobs, weekly, fortnightly, monthly, of who was good out of that. I had 4 months to teach these girls, and I did it all. And then at the end of it, come out, she said, we hated your guts for garters because you were so strict. But that didn't stop them from falling into a trap, which I said to them, watch out for whatever it was. Otherwise, you'll end up by really digging a hole for yourself. And sure enough, they did it. Mm. And one of them did have the opportunity to turn around and say, that was what Glenys was trying to avoid us getting into. But that's how it is. I mean, I had a boss who, well, I had 2 bosses, really. One was the person who interviewed me and got me the job. Yes. And he was sort of a hands-on guy. And he died at the age of 42 with cancer. The other was a Catholic chappie who left to go and be a publican. And he died at the age of 42. And he was the sort of person, if you went up to ask him a question, he never answered you, except he answered it with a question every time. So that's how it works out. But then we had other people that worked at Watties and said, I will look into it. And they had the nickname of the Mirror Man.
Yeah.
So there we are. Yeah. And then I really had to fight to get back into the job, in a sense, in 1973, after I had second son. I did the odd time through... We would like you to work the weekend, Glenys, except it was a long weekend. Jim was going to be away on buses for the weekend. I was expecting my second child, 7 months pregnant, and they said, oh, no, they only want to work Saturday morning. Well, I'm not coming in just for that. If you say you're busy as you are, then you need to have somebody there the Saturday, Sunday, Monday, which I'm prepared to do, but because I'm pregnant, they wouldn't allow me to do it on my own. So they did get one other girl to come in, and we had the security people coming in every half hour to an hour, just checking to make sure I was all right. I'm 2 months off being pregnant, but I was so large. But anyway, the long and the short of it is I kept up with that. Managed to go back in 73, and then from there we went from punch card to VDUs to proper computers. And if something happened, it was documented down. We had to work it. Rob Muldoon put on a price freeze, and because we hadn't completed the full price increase, we had to revert it back. So for 2 hours I sat and key punched away.
So how long did you stay at Watties the second time then?
I'd got my 20 years. I had to wait 20 years to get my gold watch when everybody else got theirs at 15. You know, they changed it. And I was made redundant June of 97. So I was from 83 through to 97. And for the following 3 years after that, I worked as an outside contractor, which I had to pay ACC and everything else. And so when the boss turned around and said, well, how much do you want? I just said, well, I don't know. What's the going rate? And he said, well, $16 an hour. And I said, well, that's what I'm getting now. And I have to pay ACC. I have to pay all the GST and everything else that goes with it. So I leant forward to Ray Knowles and I just said, shall we double it? Well... I sort of thought between 20 and 25, so I went right down the middle at 22.50. Working 2 hours a day, I got more money that way than working all week and having to do everything else. So, yes, that finished in the year 2000, and we were actually looking after our grandson at that point for 15 months. We had Joshua with us, and they came up and said, Australia turned around and said that they didn't want me anymore. So that was fine, and my job was going to come to an end at the end of that October. And I said, well, that's all right, Ray. I said, I'm due to go away on holiday in 10 days' time, and I said, I won't be back then. And I was the first outside contractor that they ever gave money. I got $100. That's been altered. But the flowers on the corner, we got put into that vase. The vase we'd already had, but we've had those redone since we've been here, and they cost $130 to have it like that. But for $100, and they went to Australia, they came back.
See, that's fascinating. You know, Jim has had a very interesting life, and, you know, to hear your story, the full package.
Well, my mum always mentioned that things go round and they come back. And our very first telephone number that we had ended in 067, those same three letters, the same Melbourne. I started off with John Drury, who was an accountant, ended up in an accountant's tax office position in Melbourne before I left. So, yes, it does go around.
Yeah. And you didn't search for those numbers, did you?
No.
Okay, so during this period you went to Australia and had your adventure with the tour buses and living a different lifestyle. Then you came back home. Did you work when you came back to New Zealand or did you retire?
Well, yeah, we did work in one way. I still work. I have a part-time job. I mean, it is a part-time job. And that is relocating rental cars for a company. So, yeah, we do, you know, might take a car from Napier Airport up to Auckland and come home in a van. They don't fly down back, people think they do, but no. We go by van, just what I do too, we get more money, we get paid the minimum per hour. So that keeps me occupied. Some months we get no work at all. Last month we had three trips, which, you know.
Basically, we did come back to retire because when we arrived back in on the 3rd of February, the 4th of February we were at Wynns because Jim was at that stage a good 11 months coming up to 66 and I was only 3 to 4 months over 65. So because we'd gone in on that day and we couldn't make an appointment until the 10th of February, we managed to get our super started straight away at that point. We got all our money from Australia back out because we were retiring, we were leaving the country and we weren't going to work anymore. And we got a very good, the exchange rate and the interest rate that we got when coming over, we were able to retire.
And so did you come here?
Not straight away. Yeah. We bought...
I'll tell you a little story before Guinness goes into that one. I retired on 5th of January, which was a...
2010.
Another day. Tuesday. So finished work on Tuesday. Yep, finished. That's it. And Guinness and myself love bike riding. We bought a tandem push bike. We've also got two singles, which we've still got. So we go bike riding on Wednesday on the tandem. We go bike riding on Thursday on the tandem. This is a great life. No work, go bike riding on Friday. And you've heard the old saying, a tree jumped out of this. And I picked myself up off the ground and look at Glenys. She's there playing around with her thumb. And I said, when you finish playing with that? I said, how about grabbing the bike, giving it a good almighty yank, and get it off me, because my right leg was on the ground, had the bar of the bike, I had tree branches, my face, my glasses, everything was bent. So she finally decided she'd pull the bike off me and I stood up and I said, ooh, I think I might have twisted my ankle pretty bad. So anyway, instead of using a mobile phone to ring up her son to get us, I stag over the bike, straighten up the handlebars, glasses like this, and away we go. Biked about, to, I suppose, 400 metres. There's a hospital on our right. No, we bike 14k home, don't we? We get home, By this time, I'm only using my left leg, and Glenis is using both at the back. But we got home, staggered in, put the bike in the shed, looked at ourselves, and I said, well, I think we better go to the chemist. So we jumped in the car, and Glenis went over to the chemist, and he sold us a lot of ointment, and he said, I think really you should go and see the doctor. So we go home again and have a cup of coffee and have a talk about that. So Glenis rang up her doctor, because at this stage I'd got all my paperwork from my doctor. So we go to the doctor's, and she says, well, I'm going to send you down to a unit another K down the road. They've got x-ray, they've got plastering. So anyway, away we go down there, and Glenis goes and gets the x-ray first, comes back out, and I'm still staggering without crutches or anything else on my crook leg, and get in, and he starts laughing. What are you laughing at? He said, you won't believe it. I said, what? He said, your wife's got a broken thumb. And he said, you've got a broken leg. I said, not my leg, it's my ankle, that's all. He had a broken leg. So, sent us down to the plaster room, and they were flat out. Chris and me were sitting in the corridor, thinking about our bodies, and the doctor came out and said, what are you doing here? Oh, they're flat out in there. Don't worry about them, she said. So she wrote us out a letter, go to the hospital. I said, I'm getting hungry. So we went home, had lunch. After we had lunch, get in the car, we waved to the next door neighbour, and Chris wanted one out there. Oh, we're just taking Jim up to the hospital. And she just laughed. Away we go up to the hospital. There again, get me leg, put into plaster. He asked about Glenis, and she said, I've got the paperwork and x-rays, but they're in the car. The poor girl had to walk out. A real hot, 35 degrees. Day. Walk down the car, get her stuff. The long and the short of it was, he made up a splint for her. Says, right, you're going to a different hospital on Monday, where they'll make you up a permanent cast type of thing. And you will go on Tuesday to the same hospital she went to on Monday to go to the orthopaedic. So Monday she goes, she drove herself down and got growled at for driving herself home by the hospital. Yeah. Just, well, you know, I'm all right, I can still drive the car. Yeah. So she brought me down there on the Tuesday morning, and at this stage, the packers were coming in to pack the house.
On a Monday.
So the stress factor was very, very high. So we get down to the hospital, found where we had to go. You have to come back about 11 o'clock, there's no beds. So stress factor was getting up. So run home again, back down there at 11 o'clock. Still got no beds, but we'll put you into the heart unit. So I went into the heart unit, and I took some more x-rays. The orthopaedic said, we're going to put a screw in the ankle. That's what they had to do, put a screw in the ankle, because I actually pulled the ankle out. And they never picked it up at one hospital, but they picked it up at the second one. So that put me into a plaster for over 3 months. And of course, we had everything booked to come home. We'd arranged to fly to Brisbane to see my son. No way you had to fly, lad, unless you can keep your leg elevated.
Well, how did you crash?
We were biking, and it was a beautiful day. She says, look at all the rabbits! And she swung the bike over to the right.
Oh, arm, dear.
Straighten it up! And I was trying to straighten the bike up. So she could realise what was happening. So she sat up. By that time, I had just a wee bit of lock on to go to the left, straight into this tree. We could see the tree coming. Yeah, and I was on the anchors. We do not, both of us, do not remember falling over.
The last I recall, I huddled in behind Jim because all the smaller tree branches were breaking. Coming. And the next thing is Jim said, up looking at my thumb, but there was blood coming away from a very small sort of hole. And I did this to my thumb, brought the thumb in, but it went click. I thought, well, I can't leave it like that. I have to go back this way. Mm-hmm. And I overcorrected it and just broke it. But, you know, can't put the key in the car, you know, I had to use the left hand, put the key in the ignition, got told you shouldn't be driving, and I said, well, I can still hold here.
So, the tandem obviously has since departed.
No, it's all right.
Do you maintain total control now?
Yeah, she knows now, not to be silly. Let us say the stress factor was very, very high because, as I say, we had the packers coming in. I was in hospital instead of one night. Okay. I had problems, so I was kept in 2 nights. Got home, in the bed. Packers had done a day's packing. Glenis! So he came into the bedroom. Where's the remote? Guess what? The Packers have packed it. TV's still there. Remote's
oh,
gone.
Dear.
Have a shave the next day. Where's my razor? They packed that. Oh, yeah. It was just the stress factor was going higher and higher. So then, of course, we had to keep flying. So Glenis went to the travel agent and said, well, Jim can't have his foot on the ground, you know, on the deck. He's got to have it elevated. She says, well, the only way we can do that is upgrade you into, well, they call it first class. She said, well, what will that cost? So they gave her a figure. She said, oh, I don't want to buy the aeroplane. She said, well, that's for the two of us. And she said, no, I'll travel baggage class and Jim can go. I could get my leg elevated. But then when we got to Brisbane, you laugh at this one. I had to go and see a doctor there. to get the stitches taken out. That was a must. So our daughter-in-law arranged with a doctor.
She made the appointment.
I said to Glenys, now, if it's a Dr. John, tell the nurse you don't want him.
This is what our daughter-in-law said. She's in a medical profession. Yeah.
So we get there, I'm sent down to a room. So Glenys asks the receptionist, what doctor's Jim having? Dr. John. No. Glenys says, he's not having Dr. John. Told him the reason why. So anyway, next minute this man walks in, he's got a pile of paper and he throws it on the bed and gone. So the nurse comes in, she takes the stitches out for me. That's what I wanted. Stitches taken out.
Was that Dr. John?
No, he was Indian. And the guy that came in to do Jim and to see him, he was Asian. He was so nice. He was just looking.
So then you got home.
Well, to get home it took a little while because, as I say, we decided we'd fly to Brisbane. And my first obstacle was going through
customs.
Even there, to go domestic, you go through everything, x-rays. And I had a smart, I might have upset him somewhere when I was delivering staff, I don't know. But he gave me a very, very hard time. He told me I had to walk through there and I told him, straight, I couldn't walk. I had to have my crutches. He got all shooty of me. I got shooty of him. And, of course, the sweat, the tension.
And then told him to take his belt
buckle
off.
Buckle off. You know, take the belt out of my pants. And I said, I'm not doing that. Pants will fall down. And I was getting very heated. Yeah. So anyway, I finally got through there. And we got to Brisbane. Very nice flights and business class. They're lovely. But what annoyed me was that seat was empty. I was sitting by the window. Glenys could have come in. But no. She's only sitting behind a curtain. Yes, she isn't. But then when we flew to come home, we booked Qantas again, there again. Staff got up to go through immigration, customs and all that rubbish. The joker said, can you walk through there without your crutches? I said, no, I can't, I'm sorry. I got doctor. No, don't worry about that. Got a wheelchair for me, put me in a wheelchair, out that door. When I come back in the place, I'm past all that. He said, we better do something, Jim. So I got the old wine and put it under my armpits. No, you're right. So it was as quick as that. And when we got back to the NZ, I've got to be honest, we flew Qantas, the top marks to Air New Zealand. As soon as I stepped off the plane, Air New Zealand were there waiting for me, put me in a wheelchair, waited for our baggage, loaded all that up. We got through immigration customs like that, transferred the bags, that area, to go domestic. Got out onto the terminal, there's a minibus waiting for me, put me into the minibus. Took us over to the domestic. Girl waiting there for another wheelchair. She wheeled me in, got us booked in. And of course, being local aircraft, couldn't walk up the steps, so had to get a forklift. Auckland and Napier.
Yes.
But I had that for crutches and they were plastered on me for three months, which was a long time.
But you'd actually rent your crutches in Melbourne, but we said that we were coming back here.
Well, it cost you, I think it was $5 a week to rent them, and I was told I'd be 3 months. So the chap at the hospital said, you better to buy them, get them a ring when you get home. So got on the phone, rang the hire place up, told them what had happened. He said, what's the number on the crutches, that little purple sticker on the number? So I told him what the number was, and he said, well, 70 for $55. How are you going to pay? I said, well, if you like, I'll pay you by Visa now, I'll give you the Visa number. Well, if you're going to do that, he says, we'll make it $50. I said, yeah, $50 with a receipt too, please. I've still got them in the wardrobe there.
So then you came back to Havelock North?
No, we stayed with Glenys' brother Peter's when we first arrived back, and we got into our room and we had the old magazines of all the houses, and we found a lovely house on Barcroft Street, which was brand new, wasn't quite finished. So he took us down there to have a look through it, and I'm walking around this lovely house of crutches. River, I walked on the carpet, there were little round marks where the crutches had been, and wife came down, it was just a one-man builder. His wife came down later on the day and said, what are all the marks on the carpet? So she told him the story about me being on crutches. So the land agent then took us to a flat in Linden Road. As soon as I walked in the front door, I said, no, don't like it. So we made up our mind we'd buy this Barcroft property. So we went to a lawyer, put a price in, and he said, there is one other offer in, so we'll see how we go. And Rick Peters' place having tea, and the phone rings the same night. And it was a lawyer, it was called to 6 o'clock from around.
Yeah,
you own a house, he said. So we actually got the house. We couldn't shift in straight away because there's still a bit of work to be done, and the compliance, of course, for the house. We shifted into there. Now, I've got to admit, it was a lovely house, but I found I couldn't mow the lawns. I can't start mowing the lawns, the old asthma would kick in. Not that bad, I couldn't wash a car. And I said, yes, oh no, we'll have to do something. And she saw an ad about these places here, and I said, no, I don't know if that'll do me or not. Anyway, we came down and had a look, and this block was just 4x2s and a roof on the top. See the plans. So we decided we'd take, if we could get this one. Perfect, the reason we took this one is that, as you can see, we've got the orchard out there.
And if you had both the doors open, so that we a bit of a breeze.
So going. This is where we
so
are.
So this is the story of your life. Well, I think that's probably a good note to finish on, and I'd just like to say thank you very much. While we think a lot of the things we do don't have interest, you know, your family, your great-great-great-grandchildren one day will open this website up and they'll hear this history in your voices, and you know, that really will be very special.
If we have got time, just for a very quick, I would like to add another two things which I did forget to mention. In my younger day of 18-year-old, the government at the time decided we'd have National Army training, which was a ballot for your birthdays. And I was lucky or unlucky enough for my birthday number to come up. So I was balloted to go into National Service. But me being a kind-hearted person, our neighbour came over from where we lived in Victoria Street and said, would you mind giving me a hand of the washing machine? Yeah, I'll do that for you. And I had jandals on. Walked across this person's front lawn. They had taken a fence out of totara posts, and I happened to walk down the hole, one of these post holes, and went straight through my jandal up into my foot. And anyway, to cut a long story short, I ended up going to the doctors, ended up at hospital, sent home, bandaged up. But I had a recurring problem for quite a while with this foot, and they decided they would operate on it after many visits. And they got a bit of totara post out, about the size of that.
I tried to take it out with poultice because wood doesn't come up.
So that, I thought, well, that'd be the end of that. And I came right, go to work, pair of boots. I'd be driving the truck, I was at Napier Wellington at the time, driving the truck, boot feels a bit tight. Take my boot off, my ankle's up like this. So I was actually delivering around by Dr. Hopkirk, if you remember Dr. Hopkirk, or your surgeon Hopkirk. So I just pulled a truck up on the side of the road, went and seen him, took one look at it, cut it open. Got a bit of barley grass. Now, I had trouble with that ankle for about 3 years, wasn't it, Glenys?
Right through that
period. Right through that period. Oh, I'd be in and out of hospitals getting ankle cut or the bottom cut.
So how did the barley grass...
Well, it must have been in the hole.
And gone through up into your ankle. Because we used to have trouble with barley grass and dogs, eyes and ears.
Well, I'll cut out a lot of the story, but the last time I went for an operation was... How long before our wedding?
You had complete bed rest 8 weeks before we were married, and then you were back in hospital 4 weeks before we were married.
And the doctor said to me, you'll be going up the aisle or down the aisle, whichever way you like it, either on crutches or a wheelchair. That's how close it was, but no, I did manage to.
So you never had to go in to do your CMT?
Well, I did, but instead of taking 3 years, it took me 7 years, not only because of my ankle, but because of my position of work, the companies keep putting in, no, we can't do without Jim, we can't do without Jim.
So where did you go?
I ended up in Waiu, 1st Armoured Division, but because of my expertise on trucks, which I didn't really want, I was put straight into another GMC's. I ended up on a GMC. We had a driver instructor to take us out for a half-hour run. I went for about 5 minutes, and he told me to turn around and go back. I could drive better than what he could. So we ended up on RLs. It was a good experience. We had a big laugh there one day. One of my mates had the RL because at this stage they were actually phasing out the GMs. We were out doing manoeuvres and might stop for a cuppa, and I said, I bet you this GMC can get up that hill. Ah, the RL will get up there. I bet you it doesn't. I bet you it does. Okay, let's go. The RL got so far up, being four-wheel drive, high, light, that halfway up. The old GM, I just stuck it in the first, crept up there and idled up. No trouble at all.
Did they have front-wheel drive as
no,
well?
No, ten. So yeah, no, we had a good time. Not a good time, but it took me quite a few years to get my National Service done because of the ankle problem, because it kept recurring.
All right, well, thank you, Jim, and thank you, Glenys. That's wonderful.